There's an idea that appears again and again across different traditions and cultures and philosophies. It's described in different ways. It's named in different languages, interpreted through different frameworks, but the core of it remains strikingly similar. The idea is simple, but it's not easy to live. And the idea is that within you, there is something of the divine, not metaphorically and not symbolically, but fundamentally, a presence, a knowing, a kind of inner light or intelligence that's not constructed by your personality, not shaped by your circumstances, and not dependent on your external life. In Gnostic traditions, this was often referred to as the divine spark, a fragment of the true living reality placed within the human being, existing quietly beneath layers of conditioning, distraction, and forgetfulness. And what's important about this idea is not just that it exists. It's that according to these traditions, most people are not living from it. Not because it's inaccessible, but because it's overlooked, it's ignored, or gradually replaced by something else. To understand the idea of the divine spark more clearly, it's helpful to step fully into the framework that it comes from, not just as a set of beliefs, but as a way of seeing the human condition. Gnostic teachings didn't describe the world as false in a simplistic sense. They weren't saying that nothing exists or that reality is meaningless. What they pointed to was more subtle, and in many ways more unsettling. They suggested that what we experience as reality is in part a distortion, not because it's entirely fabricated, but because it's partially perceived. A kind of misalignment exists between what is real and how it is known. And that misalignment doesn't just exist out there in the world, it exists within perception itself. This is where the idea of the Pleroma becomes important. The Pleroma, which is often described as the fullness of divine reality, is not a distant heaven or a separate realm in the way that we might imagine. It represents a state of total coherence where nothing is fragmented, nothing is misunderstood, and nothing is out of alignment with its source. From that perspective, the human being is not cut off from the divine. There is no absolute separation. Instead, there is participation, a direct continuity between the source and the individual expressed through what Gnostic texts describe as the divine spark. But the central tension in Gnostic thought is this: if that connection exists, why does it not feel immediate? Why does it not guide most people's lives in a conscious, stable way? The answer they offer is not that the connection has been destroyed. It's that it has been forgotten, and this forgetting is not an event. It's a process. It happens gradually through identification, through the accumulation of roles, expectations, and interpretations that begin to define your sense of self. You learn who you are by how others respond to you. You shape your behavior based on what is rewarded or rejected. You develop beliefs not only from experience, but from repetition. Over time, this constructed identity becomes primary, not because it's more real, but because it's more reinforced. And in that reinforcement, something quieter recedes. It doesn't disappear, but it becomes more of a background. The divine spark doesn't leave, but your relationship to it changes. It's no longer the place that you move from. It becomes something that you occasionally sense, rather than something that you consistently live from. And this is the condition that Gnostic teachings are attempting to name. Not separation from the divine, but estrangement from direct knowing. The divine spark is often misunderstood because people try to locate it within familiar categories of experience. They look for it in emotion, in inspiration, in moments of clarity or connection. But the spark itself is not a state that comes and goes. It's not dependent on circumstances, and it doesn't fluctuate with your internal weather, per se. It's way more consistent than that, and it's more foundational. If anything, It's the easiest to recognize, not when everything feels great or good, but when things feel unstable, because it remains. Even when your thoughts are conflicted, even when your emotions are intense or unclear, even when your sense of identity feels uncertain, there is still something in you that is able to observe that experience. Something that can recognize with a quiet precision what is aligned and what is not. You may not always listen to it. You may override it, question it, or even delay acting on it. But it's there, and it doesn't argue. It doesn't try to convince you. It doesn't create these elaborate narratives to prove itself right. It's not invested in being validated. It's just simply available. It simply registers. It's a kind of immediate knowing that precedes explanation. This is why people often say things like, "I knew that wasn't right," but only after the fact, because the knowing was present, but it just wasn't followed. And over time, if that pattern continues, the relationship to that knowing weakens, not because it disappears, but because it's no longer trusted. The divine spark then is not something you need to build. It's something you need to recognize again. But recognition requires sensitivity, and sensitivity requires that you're not constantly overwhelmed by louder signals, because that spark, it doesn't compete. It doesn't interrupt. It doesn't force its way into your awareness. So unless there is space internally, it's easily overlooked. So if the divine spark is always present, the question naturally becomes this: why is it so difficult to live from it consistently? The answer is not that it's hidden behind something complex or inaccessible. It's that your attention is rarely stable enough to remain with it. Attention in our world today is constantly being directed outward towards information, stimulation, comparison, even evaluation. You are trained subtly but continuously to orient yourself externally, to measure your value through response, to make decisions based on anticipated outcomes rather than your own internal clarity. And this begins early on. You learn what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, what earns approval and what leads to rejection. And in adapting to those specific patterns, you develop a version of yourself that can navigate them. That version becomes functional, but it's not always aligned. And maintaining that version requires quite a bit of effort. You have to think about how you're being perceived. You have to manage how you present yourself. You have to adjust based on feedback. All of this pulls attention outwards. The divine spark doesn't operate in that system. It does not adjust based on perception. It doesn't seek approval. It doesn't require constant reinforcement, but because it doesn't engage in that external loop, it's often deprioritized, not consciously, but functionally. You begin to rely more on what is visible, what's measured and externally confirmed, and less on what is internally known. And over time, this creates a gap. And again, not because the spark has diminished, but because your attention is no longer oriented toward it. And without attention, recognition fades, not permanently, but consistently enough that it begins to feel distance. I'm going to briefly talk about the difference between awakening and embodiment here. So there's a moment that many people encounter, whether you want to frame it spiritually or not, and it's a moment where something becomes unmistakably clear, not as an idea, but as a direct recognition, a sense that what you have been identifying with, your thoughts, your roles, your patterns, is not the full picture of what you actually are. And that moment for many people can be very disorienting. It can feel expansive. It can almost feel like a relief, and even destabilizing, because it interrupts something that has been operating automatically. And this is often described as having some, form of awakening, but awakening in itself is brief. It's a shift in perception, yet it's not a shift in how you live. And this is where many people become confused, because the clarity of that moment feels so significant that it's easy to assume something permanent has changed, but perception itself can shift quite quickly. Your patterns, however, do not. And embodiment is that process that's supposed to follow. It's much less dramatic. It really just involves noticing repeatedly where you are no longer aligned with what you recognized, where you fall back into reaction, where you override your own knowing, where you defer to external validation instead of internal clarity. And this isn't a failure, but it is a part of the integration process because recognition shows you what is possible. Embodiment shows you where you are not yet living from it, and the movement between those two is where the real work happens. It's not in maintaining a constant state of awareness, but in returning to it again and again and again. One of the most real challenges of embodying the divine spark is not internal, it's contextual. It's the environment that you are moving through every single day because the world, as it's currently structured, doesn't naturally reinforce this way of being. Not because there's something malicious about it, but because it's built on a different set of priorities. Modern life is organized around speed, around output, and even visibility. You're rewarded for how quickly you respond, how much you produce, how clearly you can present yourself to others. And there's an emphasis here on momentum, on keeping things moving, staying engaged, and remaining relevant. And in that kind of environment, stillness can feel like you're falling behind, and even depth itself, it can feel inefficient. Internal alignment can feel like a luxury that you don't have time for, so the tension there begins to form, not as some philosophical idea, but really as a lived experience. You feel something internally. You have a sense of knowing, a pull towards a certain pace, a need to pause or maybe to step back or move a little bit differently. And at the same time, there are some external demands that don't necessarily accommodate that. Deadlines aren't going to wait for your clarity. Conversations don't always leave space for reflection, and opportunities don't always align with your internal timing. So it begins to feel like you have to choose. Either you stay connected to yourself and risk not keeping up, or you adapt to the pace around you and risk losing that connection. This is where many people quietly decide to compromise, not all at once, but at least situationally. They override what they sense in order to meet what is expected, and over time this becomes normalized. But the deeper issue is not the world itself. It's the assumption that you must operate at the same level of reactivity that surrounds you in order to function within it. That assumption goes largely unquestioned, but it's not accurate because it's entirely possible to move through a fast-paced environment without becoming internally rushed, to engage with complexity without becoming internally fragmented, and to respond without having to react. This is where embodiment becomes practical. And it's not about withdrawing from the world, as some people would tell you, or as some previous conceptions of a monk on a clifftop somewhere isolated from the world. That's not practical embodiment, right? It's about no longer allowing the external pace to dictate your internal state. And that distinction changes everything. So to embody the divine spark, again, is not to add something to yourself. It's to stop abandoning what is already present. And I know that sounds very straightforward when I'm saying this, but when you begin to look at it closely, you realize how often leaving yourself has been normalized. It rarely happens in these obvious, dramatic ways. It happens in small, almost invisible decisions. Moments where you sense something clearly and then you talk yourself out of it. We all do this. Moments when you feel resistance and then you override it because it seems inconvenient. Moments where you adjust your response, not because it's true for you, but because it will be more easily received. And individually, these moments seem kind of minor. They don't register as being significant, but they do begin to accumulate. And what they build over time is distance. Not from other people, but distance from your true self, your divine spark, right? A kind of internal dissonance where parts of you knows what's true, but that knowing is no longer guiding your actions. And instead, your actions are shaped by habit, expectation, or fear of consequences. Embodiment is the reversal of that pattern, but it doesn't happen through force. It doesn't happen by trying to suddenly become fully aligned in every single moment. That approach tends to collapse under its own pressure. What actually creates change is attention, the willingness to notice in real time when you are about to leave yourself, and then, when possible, choosing differently. Not perfectly, but at least intentionally. Sometimes that's going to look like speaking more honestly, and sometimes it will look like pausing instead of reacting. Sometimes it will simply just be acknowledging internally that this isn't aligned with me, even if you don't change your behavior immediately, because even that level of honesty begins to close that gap. And over time, these moments of recognition and small corrections begin to accumulate in a different direction. They rebuild trust. And this isn't external trust that I'm referencing. This is a rebuilding of your internal trust. And that's the trust. That trust is what allows embodiment to stabilize. So the idea of the divine spark can easily become abstract if it's not grounded in the body. Many people experience their inner knowing as something mental or intuitive, something that exists in thought or awareness, but it's disconnected from their physical experience. But embodiment requires integration, and the body is where that integration becomes real. Because the body doesn't operate in concepts, it doesn't interpret in the same way that the mind does. It reflects directly and continuously. If you're in a conflict internally, the body shows it. Tension appears, often without you consciously deciding it. Your breathing becomes shallow, your posture begins to tighten, and there's a subtle contraction that runs beneath your awareness. And most of the time, this goes unnoticed, and not because it's subtle, but because it's familiar, and then it becomes your baseline. So part of embodiment is not about controlling the body. It's about learning to include it in your awareness in a more consistent way, to notice what's happening physically, not as this separate layer, but as part of the same experience, because the body often registers misalignment before the mind is willing to acknowledge it. There's a hesitation, maybe a tightening, a sense of unease that appears before you have a clear explanation for it. And if you are not paying attention to your body, you miss that signal. You move forward anyway, and only later do you realize that something was off. But when the body is included, that process changes. You begin to recognize earlier, begin to feel the difference between what is aligned and what is not. Not as an idea, but as an actual physical experience. And that's what makes embodiment more stable. Because now it's not something that you're trying to remember conceptually. It's something that you are sensing directly. So let's talk about what it means to live from this divine spark. So living from the divine spark doesn't mean becoming an idealized version of yourself. It doesn't mean that difficulty is going to disappear, or that you stop experiencing conflict and uncertainty, or emotional intensity. Those are going to remain. What changes is your point of reference. So instead of being fully identified with every thought that arises, there's space around it. Instead of being carried entirely by emotional reactions, there's an awareness of them as they move. Instead of being defined by external circumstances, there's something within you that remains more stable than those circumstances. And that stability begins to influence how you act. Again, not in this dramatic, immediate transformative way, but it's more subtle and you have more consistent shifts. You pause more before responding, not out of some sort of hesitation, but out of, clarity's sake. You become less interested in reacting quickly and more interested in responding accurately, and I would also say intentionally. You begin to notice when something doesn't align, and instead of overriding it automatically, you give it some weight. Your decisions may look similar, on the surface, but internally they come from a different place. So there's less urgency, less fragmentation, and you experience more cohesion. And over time, you know, that specific coherence begins to compound because you're no longer moving in a way that consistently contradicts your own knowing. This doesn't make life easier, like in some sort of simplistic sense. In some ways, it can make certain choices more direct and therefore a little bit more uncomfortable, but it makes your experience more honest and more stable. Because you're no longer trying to maintain this version of yourself that's disconnected from what you actually sense to be true. So you're moving from something that is deeper within you, maybe not perfectly, but consistently enough that it begins to shape the direction of your life. And that is what embodiment actually looks like. It's not a fixed state, but it is a pattern of returning until what once felt distant begins to feel like the most natural place to live from. So just to end this episode, you know, the idea of divine spark can easily become extremely abstract. It can be something that you think about, reflect on, or even believe in, but its significance is not in the concept itself. It's in the actual embodiment of it, because if something within you is already whole and it's already connected and it's already aligned, then the question is not how to create that, but how to stop moving away from it. And that's not a single moment in time. It's this ongoing process, and it's one that just unfolds over time through your awareness, through your practice, and through the quiet, consistent act of returning to yourself. Everyone, thank you for listening and connecting with me today. I look forward to connecting with you next weekend. Please, as always, take care of yourselves.